Okay, so continuing on the revelation of Jesus Christ, we're going to move into chapter 10 today. And this chapter 10, I kind of subtitled the King of Kings in His Gospel. And we'll kind of see that over the next couple of weeks. It'll be a couple, two, at least a two-part, if not more, but at least a two-part study as we're going through here. And so let's, somebody want to take Revelation chapter 10, the whole chapter, 1 through 11, please.
And I saw another strong angel coming down out of heaven, clothed with a cloud, and the rainbow was upon his head, and his face was like the sun, and his feet like pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book which was open, and he placed his right foot on the sea and his left on the land. And he cried out with a loud voice, and when a lion roars, and when he had cried out, the seven peals of thunder uttered their voices. And when the seven peals of thunder had spoken, I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying, "Seal up the things which the seven peals of thunder have spoken, and do not write them." And the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and on the land lifted up his right hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created heaven and the things in it, and the earth and the things in it, and the sea and the things in it, that there shall be delay no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound, then the mystery of God is finished, as he preached to his servants and the prophets. And the voice which I heard from heaven, I heard again speaking with me and saying, "Go take the book which is open in the hand of the angel who stands on the sea and on the land." And I went to the angel, telling him to give me the little book. And he said to me, "Take it and eat it, and it will make your stomach bitter, but your mouth will be sweet as honey." And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it, and it was in my mouth sweet as honey. And when I had eaten it, my stomach was made bitter. And they said to me, "You must prophesy again concerning many peoples and nations and tongues and kings."
Okay. So there's obviously quite a bit there that maybe some questions that we're having as we read that chapter. We're going to answer a few today. But the first question or first thing you want to mention is we want to know who the angel is and what his purpose is. Yeah, there's another question maybe came up is why does John reveal some information and he doesn't reveal other information or seals it up? Okay, and is there a reference where the thunder uttered the voice and he was told not to write those things down? And so that's maybe a question that comes up. Another one would be what is the little book and why does John eat the little book? And obviously it's a vision that John's having here, so it's he's not actually eating a book. A literal physical book, but he is eating a book in the vision. And so why is that? And what is this book that he eats? And why is the book, why is it sweet in the mouth, but why is it bitter in the stomach? You know, if you ever ate paper as a kid, it wasn't really sweet in the mouth, you know, so it was, I don't know if people did that at all. But it's not sweet in the mouth physically. I know you did it too. It's not sweet in the mouth physically. So why does it say it's sweet in the mouth but bitter in the stomach? If you see in verse 1 of Revelation chapter 10, we see that as we're going to go on here, that the word for angel, we've talked about this a few times throughout the study already. But the word, Greek word angel, means angel or messenger. Okay, that's what that Greek word would mean. If we turn back to Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3, last book of the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 3. Somebody like to read verse 1 through 3 of Malachi chapter 3, please.
"Behold, I am going to send my messenger, and he will clear the way before me. And the Lord whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple, and the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight, behold, he is coming, says the Lord of hosts. But who can endure the day of his coming, and who can stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire and like a fuller's sulfur. He will sit as a smelter and a purifier of silver, and he will purify the sons of Levi and refine them like gold and silver, so that they may present to the Lord offerings of righteousness.
Okay, so we have here in Malachi chapter 3, verse 1, there's two different messengers, if you notice. In verse 1, I'm going to send my messenger and he'll clear the way. That's talking about John the Immerser. But in verse 2, part of 1 and 2, he talks about the one who the Lord will appear in his holy temple, in his temple suddenly. And then he says, the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight. Okay, it's talking about the Lord. So Jesus here is referred to as a messenger, the messenger of the covenant. Okay, John was a messenger as well, but Jesus here is referred to as a messenger. And so when we're talking about, well, who is this angel then? Who's this angel describing? It's not out of the ordinary for this angel to be talking about Jesus, because again, angel, the word angel means messenger or someone delivering a message or proclaiming something. Jesus is one who is doing that, and he is one who is referred to in the Old Testament. A prophecy of him was he was going to appear as a messenger, as the Lord appears in his temple, the messenger of the covenant. All right, so we turn back to Revelation chapter 10 again. So this messenger, as we see here, comes out of heaven, or it comes from heaven. Okay, you see, he saw a strong angel coming down out of heaven. The first part of verse 1 there in Revelation chapter 10. So this messenger came out of heaven. We turn a couple more times in Revelation, turn to chapter 18. We'll start there. 18. Chapter 18, 1 and 2. Revelation 18, verse 1 and 2.
After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illumined with his glory. And he cried out with a mighty voice, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and she has become a dwelling place of demons, and a prison of every unclean spirit, and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird."
Okay, so in verse 1, not sure why I put verse 2 down, but, he cried out in a voice. But verse 1 is the main part of what I wanted to point out there, is that this angel is coming down from heaven. He has great authority, and the earth was illumined by his glory. Okay, so we know that, and we're going to get to a little bit of that here in a minute as well, further in the study today. But Christ's glory is illuminating. We can go to Isaiah, chapter 6, and we can see some of that stuff there. We're not going to go there today, but you see Isaiah, he saw the glory of the Lord. We have other times we can go to Ezekiel's, another time we can go another passage we can go to where it talks about the glory of the Lord and how it's bright and illuminating. We know that you can even go back to Moses when God covers Moses with his hand and passes by and he sees the glory, and it's because that consuming brightness would kill him. The glory of the Lord would kill him. So Christ's glory is illuminating here. Again, it doesn't say in chapter 18 this is talking about Jesus either. It doesn't use the word, but it uses the angel coming out of heaven that has the whole earth is illumined with his glory. Okay, now, and people can maybe try and say, well, yeah, that's, that could be a messenger from Jesus and coming from his presence. But I think when we have the understanding that this is, this messenger, this is under Jesus' authority, this is Jesus carrying this out, kind of maybe, it's going along with what Kyle was saying. I mean, not exactly, but if you have the idea of you don't do things that you're asked to be do, ask people to do things that you're not willing to do yourself. I mean, yeah, okay, the angel sent the message, but God is coming with him. God is you know, that God is taking charge and he is leading the way. So it makes sense that this could be talking about Jesus here, especially when it uses terms like the whole earth is illumined by his glory, and he is the one who is crying out against Babylon. Okay. Now I'm not going to talk about what Babylon is today, but he is the one who's crying out against Babylon. Another time we see this phrase, this messenger or angel that comes from heaven, is in Revelation 20. So a couple chapters later here, we go to Revelation 20, verse 1 and 2. Somebody like to read that, please.
And I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years.
Okay. So we see here that this angel came down from heaven. He has the key to the abyss, and he laid hold of the devil or Satan and bound him for 1,000 years. Let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2. Someone like to read verse 14, please. Of Hebrews chapter 2.
Since then, the children share in flesh and blood. He himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is, the devil.
Okay. So, Jesus is the one who rendered Satan powerless. And we're not going to get into chapter 20 and all that stuff today, obviously. But Jesus is the one who rendered Satan powerless, according to Hebrews chapter 2, by his death. Okay, he rendered him powerless. And so the angel that comes down and binds the devil when he comes out of heaven, or again, we get stuck on the word angel, and for the sake of not being like Jehovah's Witnesses and calling Jesus an angel, we shy away from it maybe, but angel can mean messenger, okay? And if you think of Jesus, was Jesus not a messenger when he came to earth? And he was a messenger from heaven. Okay. Yeah. Okay. John's a messenger. We are messengers too. But Jesus was a messenger. Yeah. That's that word is. It's not a huge thing that would mean something other than Jesus. Jesus is a messenger. And so the angel or messenger that comes down out of heaven, in Revelation 18, he is the one who is crying against Babylon. Okay. And we see that in Revelation 20, that angel that comes out of heaven, he is the one who binds Satan. And for 1,000 years. And Jesus, we know, is the one who did bind Satan and render him powerless according to Hebrews chapter 2. We also know that God is the one who is going to destroy Babylon too. And so again, we're not going to get into Babylon today or what the binding is of Satan, but we know that God is ahead of that. God is in charge of that, and God is going under God's authority that is happening. So it's not out of the question to see that, well, this angel here could be talking about Jesus, because Jesus is the messenger and Jesus has the power to do that. And Jesus also is the one who led the charge in destroying Babylon and binding Satan. Anybody have any comments on that before we move on further?
One thing is that in Luke chapter 24, when it's talking about the women coming to the tomb, and there was two men there, two angels there, basically, they didn't illuminate the whole earth. They were bright. They had bright clothing, but Jesus' glory is probably bigger than theirs.
Right.
I don't know if that adds anything to that, but
sure.
But there's been some spots when angels have appeared, but they haven't. Even like when Jesus was, or when Paul was going to Damascus, there was a bright light there, but nobody else got blinded by it. Just he did. So, I don't know.
Right.
But if Jesus was there, it would have been pretty bright.
Well, and
God didn't want Moses to see it, but he killed him.
Anyway. Well, then, like, even with when God, I mean, not necessarily on the brightness side, but when the 10th plague of Egypt, when God killed all the firstborn, it says on one hand the Lord killed all the firstborn, but in a few verses later it talks about the destroying angel. And so when we tie, I think it was that a couple weeks ago in the class or something, I think we talked about that, or maybe it was in the sermon, I don't remember, but that putting those together, what, you know, being the angel, well, we did, it was 2 weeks ago in the class, we were talking about the angel in chapter 9, descending and opening the abyss. And so Jesus being the angel, or that angel coming under Christ's authority and doing that, it could be Jesus being the angel unlocking that, or as it was in chapter, or in the 10th plague, is that the destroying angel was God. And God is capable of doing that because God is all powerful, and God is the one who has the hand in leading the charge in destroying. It was God who destroyed the firstborn of Egypt. It wasn't an angel, even though it does talk about the destroying angel. So it's not uncommon to tie that together and say, okay, yeah, it does say destroying angel, or it does say angel or messenger, but it could be talking about Jesus or talking about God. I mean, the same would be true with when the three men met Abraham, and Abraham recognizes them and calls them Lord. So, but it calls them men. So it's not out of the ordinary for an angel to be referring to Jesus, or a man in that case of Abraham there being referring to Jesus as well. Come on, Brent.
You know, in verse 1 there, you know, it references the strong angel. Or, you know, I think that another closely related term there you could use is mighty, mighty angel. And not, I don't want to try to get ahead of here, but you look back at chapter 5, you know, that was the same word there, you know, a mighty or a strong angel there. You get the picture of the book and, you know, stuff in chapter 5. And then, you know, you just see it throughout here. You know, why do we need to change who this angel is? And that's what people try to do. You know, they try to put titles and different things on this. And I think that description throughout Revelation is a reference to Christ.
Yeah.
And I mean, as we clearly saw here in just a very short time of research, you know, looking at different passages in Revelation and then back into the Hebrews there. I mean, it clearly points to that being Christ. And I just think it's, you know, and it's just that, it's that messenger, you know, he's bringing that message to John, or, you know, in turn going to the people, you know, through that, I guess. So just because it doesn't say Jesus or, you know, God's son there, doesn't mean that we just can't put that together.
Right. Another thing to point out too, it does not mean that Jesus is an angel as in created, as in a created being. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying that the term angel can mean messenger, and the Greek word can be messenger, and Jesus in the Hebrew, and I didn't look up that Hebrew word, but it was messenger. The same word was used, the same time there is used for John, the immerser, a messenger. So it's just a messenger. Okay, so Jesus is referred to as messenger at times in the scripture. The other thing that I was gonna, you know, point out too is that, you know, it might be a little, we might go into a little bit of detail or even a lot of repetitive stuff today too, but I think when we're kind of trying to point this out to set the stage for what we're going through in chapter 10 here, and even past this, it's important to understand that it's a good review at the very least, or it's a great reminder at the most, and nailing down who this is very important, because if it's something that's still in the future for a little bit of a period of time, then it's not as important, or it doesn't apply to us. But if it actually is talking about Jesus, and it is talking about something that is happening today, then it is important for us to understand it for sure. But so, we nailed down that Jesus referenced it to an angel. Okay, that's not out of the question. And again, we're going to build on that idea, this argument that the angel is talking about Jesus or the King of Kings here. And as we continue on in these next few verses today. But we see in verse 1, again, another thing that was talking about is that this angel, or this being, this strong angel, had a rainbow upon his head. Okay. In the Greek, this word is only used twice. Okay. The other time it's used is back in Revelation chapter 4. So turn back over there. Revelation chapter 4. Somebody like to read verse 3, please. Okay, so talking about the one who sits on the throne, obviously this is referencing God here, and it says that he has a rainbow around the throne. Okay, this word, this Greek word here is used, that is used in chapter 10, the only two times it's used in the New Testament. The angel in the, chapter 10 has the rainbow around his head. In chapter 4, it's the rainbow around the throne. So it's connected with the throne. It's connected with the Lord. Turn back to Ezekiel chapter 1. Ezekiel chapter 1. And again, we went to Ezekiel probably a few times in our study of Revelation. But Ezekiel chapter 1, we're going to see some details, remind us again there of some things, talking about the glory of the Lord and talking about the sun here. So in verse 26 through 28 of Ezekiel chapter 1, somebody like to read that, please.
Now above the expanse that was over their heads, there was something resembling a throne, like lapis lazuli in appearance. And on that which resembled a throne, high up was a figure with the appearance of a man. Then I noticed from the appearance of his loins and upward something like a glowing metal that looked like fire all around within it. And from the appearance of his loins and downward, I saw something like a fire, and there was a radiance around him. As the appearance of the rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the appearance of the surrounding radiance. Such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell on my face and heard a voice speak.
Okay, so a couple details here we see in Ezekiel 1. Here we see, obviously, I read more than we needed there, but I wanted to give some context there. Again, we see that this is the throne that's above, that has a figure that resembles a man. And when we went through that, we talked about, again, that's showing, that's talking about Jesus sitting on the throne. We went through that in chapter, we studied chapter 1 of Revelation. We were doing that and comparing there, that the one on the throne, or maybe it was chapter 4 as well, but the one on the throne is the Father, yes, but the one on the throne is the Son as well. And so this is Jesus on the throne here in Ezekiel chapter 1, and we see that he has there is a radiance around him, it says, okay? And they actually, in the translators here, have the capital H verses in Revelation chapter 10. They have the lowercase because they, I mean, I to be fair, I think there are people who think this angel is Jesus, but the translators translate it lowercase, thinking it's just an angel. But here, it is talking about Jesus here, this radiance around him, and it is talking about the Lord. And it says, as the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the appearance of the surrounding radiance. So that radiance around him, around the throne, and is according to Ezekiel chapter 1 there, was as an appearance of a rainbow. Okay, so that rainbow appearance is described as around the throne or in connection with the one who is on the throne. We see that Ezekiel, and the only two times that that word is used in the New Testament, if you consider chapter 10 that, but the first time it's used is in chapter 4 is connection with the one who is on the throne. And so chapter 10, sticking with the usage of the word and in connection with these other passages in Ezekiel and in Revelation chapter 4 and Ezekiel chapter 1, we know that the rainbow is that radiance of appearance around the throne or around the Lord. Okay, so again, this, when it says here that this angel has a rainbow upon his head, that, you know, again, that should throw us that reminder to us that that's talking about the Lord. Now, again, John uses a lot of times in the book Revelation, he'll use a lot of references of Old Testament, as we've went through quite a few things, and we're going to continue to go through through things and reference back to the Old Testament. But he does that. He references things, and that's and people go back and look into the Old Testament, because again, the recorded scripture that they had in the New Testament was the Old Testament. And they had the letters of the New Testament and things around, but until it was completed, they did not have a complete Old and New Testament Bible. So when they had these references, they can go back and look at the Old Testament passages, and they can get pictures and draw a conclusion of what he is talking about here. So again, another point that with the making the angel being saying that the angel is speaking of Jesus is that rainbow that is upon his head, that points back to the Lord also. The other thing that in chapter 1, the next thing I guess I should say, is his the face like the sun, it says, and his feet were like pillars of fire. And shouldn't really surprise us, we're going to go back a few chapters, chapter 1 of Revelation, and we see here, somebody want to read verse 12 through 18 of Revelation chapter 1 and sees this description here of Jesus.
Then I turned to see the voice that was speaking with me, and having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands, and in the middle of lampstands I saw one like a son of man, clothed in a robe reaching to the feet, and girded across his chest with a golden sash. His head had, and his hair were white like white wool, like snow. And his eyes were like the flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze when it has been made to glow in a furnace. And his voice was like the sound of many waters. In his right hand he held seven stars, and out of his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword. And his face was like the sun shining in its strength. When I saw him, I fell at his feet like a dead man. And he placed his right hand on me, saying, "Do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. And the living one, and I am was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and Hades."
Okay, so again, we read quite a bit more there than the verses we were looking at, but again, the context there showing, again, just a reminder, it's the one who walks amongst the golden lampstands, who has his hair is like white as wool, his eyes are like a flame of fire, and at the end it talks about him. He's the one who was dead and is alive forevermore. So this is all obviously talking about Jesus here. But as you see there in the middle of that, we saw that his feet were like burnished bronze or is like pillars of fire. Okay, it doesn't say pillars of fire in there, but that's that look is like burnished bronze, that glow. And when he has been when it has been made to glow in a furnace, it says. Burnished bronze is when it was made to glow in a furnace. So you have that picture, and it's not exactly word for word, but you have the picture of chapter 10 that his feet and his legs are like pillars of fire, and that's the description that John gives of Jesus here in chapter 1, is that those burnished bronze, his feet were like burnished bronze when it was made to glow in a furnace. Okay, you got them like a pillar of fire. Okay, and then you see in verse 16 that his face, the last part of it there, his face was like the shining sun, the sun shining in its strength. Okay, and we see that, that's what we see in Revelation chapter 10, verse 1, talking about the angel, is that his face, his feet were like pillars of fire. We see that his face was like the sun. Okay, well, so it wasn't word for word as in chapter 1, but shining like the sun in its strength, or his face is like the sun, gives you that same picture. And if you're not splitting hairs about not being word for word, we can honestly see that is talking and using the same description, talking about Jesus. And so John also is referencing things that he said earlier in the book, too, when he's referencing these things here. I mean, who's the first person the people are going to think about when they read this? Well, this is probably talking about the one he talked about in chapter 1, because he talks about his pillars of feet like pillars of fire, and he talks about his face shining like the sun. So it's not something that would be out of the question, again, to say that this is describing Jesus. Anybody have any comments before we move on to verse 2?
I Just one more comment, I guess, about the angel or the messenger. I think it's pretty safe to say that basically all places in Scripture where an angel is referenced there is probably a picture of Jesus or God bringing that message. You know, we have that, I think we have this idea of, people have the idea, you know, of angels, you know, coming to earth and doing things and whatnot. But even when you look at some of the Old Testament stuff, like Moses in the burning bush, that was a reference an angel. And then when Moses speaks to him, you know, it's God directly talking to Moses. It's, it, you know, the angel doesn't say, well, God told me to tell you this. He said, I am the Lord. Or another example, I think, is an angel to Hagar was giving her that message. And he said, I will make your descendants, you know, so it's not, it's that messenger. I think it's a picture of Christ, you know, definitely. It's not like this this made up heavenly created being that, that just comes down to earth, you know, with this message. I think, you know, it's God himself, I think, you know, or Jesus himself. And I think you see that all through Scripture, and, you know, Revelation is not an exception.
No, I think that that's true. When you have any, even the times where there's reference other angels, they're still in God's authority regardless, but there's many times, like you say, where it says the angel of the Lord, like Moses in the burning bush, or like Hagar, and you probably, you know, it's probably, there's probably examples we don't even think of right on top of our head, you know. The other one would be, I guess, when the hundred and the I think it was the Assyrians or surrounding Elisha, and the angel, the sword, the angel of the Lord went and struck him and killed them all, you know. So, I mean, it doesn't specifically say that that was talking about God, but God had a hand in it regardless. But still, that having Jesus be the messenger is not out of the question. And even if this in chapter 10 is even if you really have to, for conscience sake or whatever, because you, because we can't get over the fact, if you have to say that it has to be an angel, regardless of if that's what you really have to say, the angel that we, the picture that we see that the angel gives us here still ties in with what God's position is. Okay. And we'll see that a little bit more, understand what I mean by that in the next couple slides here and stuff. But when we see who God actually is, if that's actually what you have to think, that it has to be a specific angel outside of God, it still ties in with who God is and the authority that he has and the message that he has. And they're there because of the authority of God, not because of, not, I mean, obviously they're because of the authority of God, but when they're relaying the message, it's like God speaking, you know, whether it's them or not. So that, that's an, it's, if we have that mindset, it shouldn't be too hard, but again, it still shouldn't be that hard to say that Jesus was a, is a messenger either. Okay, we're going to move on to verse 2 then. So this angel, that strong angel coming out of heaven, has a rainbow on, upon his head, and has his face like the sun, and his pillars of feet, his feet were like pillars of fire. Okay, verse 2, it says, and he had in his hand a little book which was open. Okay, we'll scroll that part. So this book is open. So we talked about before, what's the book then? Okay, so we're not going to maybe get into what the book is, but I want to point out today, I want to tie it back to what we looked at, studied before. If we turn to Revelation chapter 5, turn back. Again, we're kind of turn back to this scene that we've referenced a couple times here, that has the rainbow around it. The throne has a rainbow around it. So again, this is the same throne here in chapter 4. It says that the throne had a rainbow around it. Chapter 5 is the same throne here. Verse 1 through 10, if somebody would like to read Revelation chapter 5, 1 through 10.
Who is worthy to open this book and to break its seals? And no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was able to open the book or to look into it. and I began to weep greatly because no one was found worthy to open the book or to look into it. And one of the elders said to me, stop weeping. Behold, the lion that is from the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has overcome so as to open the book and its seven seals. And I saw between the throne with the four living creatures and the elders a lamb standing as if slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And he came and he took it out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken the book, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having each one a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, worthy art thou to take the book and to break its seals, for thou wast slain and didst purchase for God with thy blood men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and thou hast made them to be a kingdom and priests to our God, and they will reign upon the earth.
All right. Again, read more than what we needed, except for I wanted to emphasize it and show a few different times there where it talks about who is worthy to open the book. Okay, so we see at the beginning there, again, we see the throne and him who sat on the throne. Again, we tie him back to that rainbow again there, and we have this angel in chapter 10 with the rainbow around his head. And we see him who's on the throne has a book written on the sides and on the back, and it was sealed up with seven seals. Okay, nobody was able to open the book. Nobody was worthy to open the book except for the Lamb, it says, okay, or Jesus. The Lamb takes the book from the one who sits on the throne, which is the Father. And again, the Father, it's not that the Father wasn't worthy, and we talked about that when we went through chapter 5. It wasn't that the Father wasn't worthy to open the book. It's that God doesn't do things that are against his plan and his will. Okay, he does his like forcing people to be obedient is against his character, and he doesn't do that. Okay, so God didn't open the book because the Son is who suffered and overcame, and he is worthy to open the book. Okay, it wasn't that God had some defilement or anything like that, but when we looking through that passage that we read there, is that the lion from the tribe of Judah in verse 5 has overcome to open the book and its seals. And you can go on further. He came into verse 7. He took the book out of his hand. And when that happened, then the 24 elders and the four living creatures fell down. They sang a song. It says, worthy are you to break to take the book and break its seals, because you were purchased, you were slain, you and purchased to purchase, for God with your blood, men from every tribe, nation, and so on. Okay, so he is the one who is worthy to take the book, break the seals, and open it. Okay, then we see, we'll go to Revelation chapter 8 here, but as we go through there, we remember in chapter 6, we see that he starts to open the seals. He starts to break each seal. Okay, so Revelation chapter 6, he broke the first seal, verse 1, and then he goes on and breaks the second seal. He breaks the first six seals in chapter 6. And we see in chapter 8, verse 1, it says, the Lamb broke the seventh seal. Okay, so we know that all seven seals have been broken now, and so now the book is open. Okay, because it couldn't open before. Tying together with breaking the seals was the desire to get the book opened. Okay, and that's what it says, is the Lamb was the one who is worthy to take the book and break its seals and open it. Okay, and nobody was able to do that besides him. So now, since the seven seals are broken, now the book is open. Now again, with reference to the parallel view of the revelation of Jesus Christ, you have your parallel view, and that is still true. But John still builds upon what he has been writing from the beginning. And we're going to continue to see that as we go on. Okay, John still builds upon what he wrote from the beginning. So he has the seals that are broken. Now he's going to describe what happens when the book is open in this particular section, 8 through 11. Chapters 8 through 11. So we see that the seventh seal is broken in chapter 8. So now we see that the book would be open now, because that's what was holding the book shut, was the seven seals. So now the book can be open. All right. Any comments on that before? And we're going to get to what the book is probably next time. But we want to emphasize here first that the book is open now because the seals are broken. And it was Jesus who had the authority to do that and the ability to do that, which is again pointing to that this angel is Jesus himself, because he's the one who is strong, that comes out of heaven, that has a rainbow around his head, that rainbow is connection with the throne, face like the sun, pillars like fire, and he has the book that's open. Okay, because the book has already been opened. He has the book in his hand, a little book in his hand, which was open, it says. Okay, it doesn't say that he opens it now. It's already open because the seals are broken. Anybody have any comments on that before we move on to the second half of verse 2? Okay, so the second half of verse 2 of Revelation chapter 10, it says that the little book was open in the first half. The second half, he placed his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land. Okay, right foot on the sea, left foot on the land. Okay, so think about what does this have to do with Jesus and what does it mean by the sea and by the land? Turn back to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, this won't be the first time we go back to Daniel. Obviously, we've been to Daniel already, but we're going to be coming back here again. Daniel chapter 7, verse 1 through 7.
In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind was also given to it. Behold, another beast, the second one, resembling a bear, and it was raised up on one side, and 3 ribs were in its mouth, between its teeth, and thus they said to it, "Arise, devour much meat." After this, I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying, and extremely strong, and had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns.
Okay, that's enough for today. We're going to come back here sometime in Daniel and discuss that more. But for in 1 through 7 there, we see that we have these four beasts that come from the sea. Okay. So you paint that picture, keep that in the back of your mind. We look in verse 17 of Daniel chapter 7, and it says there, these great beasts, which are 4 in number, are 4 kings who arise from the earth, or 4 kingdoms. Okay, 4 kings or kingdoms. King, a lot of times in writings, or when it refers to the king of such and such and the king of such and such, it's referring to the kingdom itself. And so a lot, that's what these were, is these 4 kingdoms. When we talk about the first one being Babylon and so on, and we'll get to that by another time. But they came from the sea. That's what we want to point out today, is they came from the sea. These kingdoms were from the sea. Turn to Revelation chapter 17 now. Revelation chapter 17. Someone like to read 1 through 5 of Revelation chapter 17, please.
One of the 7 angels who had the 7 bowls came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality. And those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with great precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality. And upon her head a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth.
Okay, do you want to read verse 15 as well, please?
And he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are people and multitudes and nations and tongues.
Okay, so we see he describes what it says in verse 15 there. He described the waters which you saw are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. You reference back to verse 2 of Revelation 17, actually verse 1. The great harlot sits on many waters, it says. Also, it says that in verse 3, saw the woman sitting on a scarlet beast. Okay, so this is the same beast that we see in Revelation 13, but we see the beast in Daniel chapter 7 were kingdoms that came from the sea, or that references as we see in Revelation 17, the peoples, tribes, nations, and tongues. Okay, so the sea represents the world. Okay, you see these, whether it's political or economic, this is the world or the influence, the physical influence of the world that this comes from. So the sea in prophecy or in poetry is representing the world. Okay, that leaves the other thing. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13, verse 1 through 10, we're not going to go there. We see that the beast comes from the sea. Okay, again, we already established that the sea represents the world. The governments coming from the sea, or political power or economic power, physical power physical influence of the world. And that, so we see that comes from the sea. The sea represents the world. Revelation 13, 11 through 13. Someone would like to read that, please. Revelation 13, 11 through 13.
Exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed, and he performed great signs, so that he even makes makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men.
Okay. So we see this beast here, he comes out of the earth. So this beast comes out of the earth, but we see that, and I don't have this on the slide, but just turn ahead to Revelation 19. Revelation 19. And we see in verse 20, because we see, if we remember back in chapter 13, we see the beast from the sea and the beast from the land. Revelation chapter 19, verse 20, it says, and the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet, who performed the signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image, and these two are thrown alive in the lake of fire, the lake that burns with fire or with brimstone. Okay, so as we're seeing that there, go back to chapter 13 then. So we see this beast from the earth. This beast from the earth, or another way to say that would be the beast from the land. The beast from the land has the two horns you see there in verse 11. Two horns, it looks like a lamb. So you see this is where it's this idea that he looks righteous or he looks like the lamb, but he's not. So this false prophet, this would be one who would not have a physical influence, but would be one who would have a spiritual influence of the world or the spiritual forces of wickedness. And I use the word of the world because that's worldly influence and referencing James. And we're not going to James today, but he talks about that earthly wisdom is demonic and it doesn't, it's not good. And I don't remember the exact quote, but he's using that he used the term worldly wisdom there, or wisdom that comes from the earth or from below, is not actually, I mean, that's maybe physical, but it's demonic. It's the spiritual forces of wickedness. So when you see this, you see the one beast that comes from the sea, and you see that sea representing the world and the physical influence of the world, and you see this beast here that comes from the land. Okay, he comes from the land. Now, we don't have any information of this before chapter 10, but I think it's interesting how Jesus here, how John is writing this, he's establishing first here, if you go back to chapter 10, verse 2, the picture that he's giving us there with that angel, which as we went through a few different things today, showing this is Jesus. This angel has his foot on the sea and his foot on the land. Would be Jesus is already above all both of those influences. He's already Lord over them. He's Lord over the sea and he's Lord over the land. And those pictures, as we're going to see later, is that the sea represents the world and represents the peoples, tribes, and tongues and nations. The waters do. And the land is where the false prophet arises from, and that's your spiritual influence of wickedness. And Jesus is over both of them. He's standing on both of them. He is over both of them. And that's that picture that we're getting here in chapter 10, as we're going to continue to go on, and other things in chapter 10, we're going to see that this is important to understand. But we're going to see that he is that the mystery is finished. The seventh angel, referencing judgment, Jesus is over all of that there, over the land and the earth and the sea. The influences for wickedness that those things have, whether it's the world, physical influence, or the spiritual influence of wickedness, Jesus is over both of them. And that's that picture that we see of that angel that is standing on the sea and the land as in chapter 10. Anybody have any comments or questions? We're going to stop here today.